Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all of our Tenpenny Files premium members who are listening to this special podcast interview. These are done only for you. They're behind the paywall, and they're part of what you pay for. And your premium podcast membership of your monthly support is really what keeps us going and really supports everything that we're doing. And we also have done some very special events this year. We've done one with Dr. Stella Emanuel. We did one with Dr. Ryan Cole. I think we're going to have one more coming up before the end of the year for a Christmas holiday special. These are just for you, nobody else. And you also get special discount codes for our boot camps, for our webinars, for our products on our store, in our supplement store, and also on our t-shirt and apparel store, which, you know, I really love our swag. I mean, to the point where like I get my own stuff and I use my own stuff, and I have like a whole bunch of my own t-shirts that I wear up to the airport. And one that it says of the t-shirts that I wear at the airport, it says faith over fear on the t-shirt. I always wear that when I go to the airport, and I wear like a sweatsuit and I have that underneath. I get so many comments and so people looking. It's like a way to like tell your faith to the world and encourage people, faith over fear, as we move forward. So during our deep dive interviews, we have a personal conversation with our guests about what inspires them and find out a little bit more personally about who they really are. So for today's deep dive guest really needs no introduction. And if you missed our This Week with Dr. T interview for Monday morning, you really need to go back and listen to it because, wow, we covered a lot of things. So let me introduce to you my friend, my longtime colleague, Alex Jones. Born and raised in Texas, Alex Jones cuts through the lies of the globalist official narrative with unrivaled analysis that has simultaneously led him to becoming the most talked about, the most reviled, and the most censored name in broadcasting. Beginning with his first show in Austin, Texas in the 1990s, he's built a media empire with over 400 radio and cable television stations, hundreds of online streaming platforms, and international syndication. His new book, The Great Reset and the War for the World, Alex exposes the World Economic Forum's agenda. He has dedicated the last 30 years of his life to studying the Great Reset. And if you listen to our first interview, you know it goes even further back than that, way back into his childhood with family members that he talked about these things. And he's conducted tens of thousands of interviews of top-level scientists, politicians, military officials, and even me, in order to reverse engineer the secrets that help awaken America. Alex possesses three traits the globalists have worked tirelessly to stamp out of the masses in order to create permanent underclass: being well-read, having a really good memory, and caring about others. Alex, welcome to the Deep Dive with Dr. T.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much over the years coming on my show, and I love coming on yours. You're doing such a good job. That's why the system is coming after you so bad right now. So people should really, really be proud of the work you've done.
Well, thank you, Alex. And yeah, they're like hot on my tail. And you know what? But it's sort of like, you know, I kind of look at it like, well, you know, it's what I'm here to do. And it's sort of like you. I mean, the system's been hot on your tail for the last, you know, year or two, too.
The more successful you are fighting this evil, the more they come after you. So we know what we got into, and, you know, God's watching.
Absolutely. Well, with all of my deep dive guests, because this is an interview that we don't usually do very often, we don't really usually pull back the curtain and find out more about who these people are. Like, who is Alex Jones? So let's start with where you were born and what was your childhood kind of like? And when you went to college, how did you decide to go into broadcasting?
Well, I mean, I could tell the whole story. It'll take a long time, but just the basics is this. I was born in Dallas. And I grew up in a suburb outside Dallas, Rockwall, and I had my mom's brother that had worked in clandestine operations, was a really great guy. He died a few years ago, who basically educated me early on how the world worked. I had a lot of other family that was also very, very well-read. I was a jock, but at the same time, I very early on liked comic books and science fiction, and I was a really good reader. So I was reading, you know, like a 12th grade level when I was 10 years old.
Wow.
And so I started reading history books just because they were so interesting. And so I read hundreds and hundreds of history books by the time I was out of high school. And then I didn't know what I wanted to go to college for. And so I thought, well, I'll just take some community college and take a wide range of courses and see what I like. And I went to Austin Community College for about a year and a half. And I, you know, had jobs and things, was already doing well in like sales at a gym. And so I was seeing how I was already making more money than the so-called professors there at the school. So I was that kind of woke me up when I was, you know, like 19 years old. And then I just noticed no matter what class I was in, whether it was Texas history or U.S. history or whether it was the math classes or what, you know, whatever it was, because when you first go to college, you make you taste these, you know, these basics. It was all very anti-American. And then I went and sat in on some UT classes. So I was thinking about enrolling there, and it was even more anti-American. And I went and looked at their RTF operation because I was thinking about getting into radio, television, film because I wanted to talk about American freedom because of the tyranny I saw in the colleges. And they were teaching stuff in RTF then that was 10 years behind. Wasn't anything about the internet, nothing about all these things I knew about. And so I thought, you know, I've got a job in sales and I'm doing better than most people with college degrees. And I said, I think I'll just, you know, not go to college. And I was about 20 years old then. And then I began to watch Access TV in Austin, is where Access TV actually began here. Had very nice studios, a lot of hosts, a big audience. And so I would see people on there playing G. Edward Griffin clips and Ted Gunderson clips and talking about the New World Order and you know, things like that and the massacre at Waco. And I knew these people were really smart, knew what they were talking about. So I went and visited my uncle in San Antonio. And I said, you know, I think I'm going to do an Access TV show, and I think I'm going to fight the New World Order. He said, that's a great idea. So I started the Access TV show, started going down there. There's only a few classes you had to take in late 94. In 95, started being a guest on some of the shows. In 96, in a control room, going live an hour, three or four nights a week. There's plenty of airtime. I was one-man show with a camera in there, punching up the show, having it go live, and really an electronic soapbox. And after about a year of that, a local radio station was switching over to talk radio from rock and roll. And the program director saw me and said, hey, would you like a Saturday night show? Come in this Saturday and do 2 hours live. Well, they just launched a talk radio and they had Howard Stern, G. Gordon Liddy, a bunch of other big people, but they had a few local shows during the week that they launched that weren't getting any calls. Well, when I went on that first night, they had 10 phone lines. And I'd have to screen the calls myself during the break, you know, just get their name and write it down. They had a board op running things, but I was even taking my own calls because they wanted me to, you know, at least get their name instead of just punching them up like I did on Access TV. Had calls as well, just, you know, hit the buttons and, you know, people were there, prank callers, regular callers, you name it. And so there I was a year after being on Access TV, hosting a Saturday night show that went from 2 hours to 3 hours. And then ratings came in a few months and had high ratings. So they gave me a Sunday night show too. And about 6 months later, they gave me a weeknight show. It got higher ratings than Howard Stern and G. Gordon Liddy.
Wow.
And the big lineup they had. And they said, well, still not going to pay you, kid. I was doing it for free. And I said, well, can I become a salesman? And so by the time I was 21, 22, I was already one of the top salesmen at a big talk radio station. And I was already, making a couple $100,000 a year. And I thought, I want to make films. This is by 1996, 97. I said, I want to show my listeners, not just have a newsletter or a coffee mug or a t-shirt like most talk show hosts have. I said, I want to actually show people stuff. So on weekends, I'd fly places, shoot interviews, show things that were going on, the UN taking over the national parks, the signs they put up, things like that. And I made my first film, America Destroyed by Design. It became an underground mega hit with people making copies of the VHS tapes. Then I came out with DVDs, and I subsequently made more than 20 documentaries. But by 1998, I said, I want to be syndicated. So I actually reached out to syndicators, met with a few big national syndicators, and they said, you know, you're too hardcore. Then I reached out to a small satellite uplink company, and I said, I just want to put myself on satellite, only like $4,000 a month, but would go to the main receivers. And then I personally hired a PR firm when I was like 25, 26 years old to call 2,000 talk stations and send them a packet of information. So the key was I spent the money I was making in sales and the money I made off the DVD and the VHS tapes that was then over $1 million to hire a PR firm to send out packets to all the talk radio stations. And I instantly, in 1998, got over 100 radio affiliates and was now doing this show out of a local station. But suddenly it got national news. I got a tax sum. The station fired me because they got political pressure, but I'd already figured that was coming. So I already built a studio in my house. And so by the year 2000, I had close to 200 radio affiliates out of a bedroom at my house. I was then married. My wife was pregnant with my first child. And so I was not even 30 years old and was on over 200 radio stations. And I was on shortwave, a lot of other stuff. And so 9/11 came around, and I really thought it was an inside job or the radical Muslims had help. We talked about the bombs in the buildings. So I went from hundreds of stations to about 40 stations in the space of a month, but I didn't back down. I didn't censor myself. And then that really exploded the show in the underground. And then over the years, we built it back up to over 400 radio stations. And it's just been a long, you know, hard battle. I took almost all the money that I made on films and DVD sales and tried to build a news media infrastructure, launched a nightly news program, hired another talk show host in the last 14 years. And then, of course, social media exploded in the last decade, and we became the biggest show, even bigger than Joe Rogan is today, by about 6 years ago. So then they came in with the debanking, the deplatforming to try to shut us down. We survived because of our own platforms like Infowars.com and being on talk radio and some cable and TV stations. And then over the last 4 years of the attack, we finally built back to about half the audience we had then. And so it's really been a Nietzschean journey of that which does not kill you only makes you stronger. And all glory goes to God and the Holy Spirit and God working through the listeners and viewers. Because Lord knows, you know, some days I do 6-8 hours of broadcasting, and sometimes it's a train wreck because it's teleprompter free and I'm a wild man. But it's been a learning process, and every mistake I made, I would redo it now if I could, except it was a learning process that made me who I am today. So I could see God putting pressure on me, God teaching me, but only giving me what I could handle at the time so that I would be ready and battle hardened for the incredible stress and attacks that I've now entered, which I've now learned are actually blessings and are actually enjoyable. And 10 years ago, I couldn't have handled this. 5 years ago, I couldn't have handled it. But it was all God, like taking the sword and beating it in like Festus or Vulcan, you know, there under the volcano into something that can now, isn't perfected, isn't perfect, isn't even that great, but has been through so many angles of attacks and been through so many, you know, globalist operations that now instead of a sword, InfoWars is more like a skeleton key that can open any door with our guests, our researchers, our callers, our ability to make things go viral, our ability to stay afloat despite all the attacks. All of it was God's plan from the beginning. None of it was me. I was just willing.
Wow, that's a great story on all different levels, Alex. I mean, such a great inspirational story of entrepreneurship that I think that people really need to hear stories like that, like yours, you know, that of how you just moved from one thing to another and you didn't give up and you took advantage of opportunities that were sitting in front of you. And you're absolutely right. I mean, God doesn't give us what we can handle. He helps us handle what we've been given. And I think that's a really important lesson. I'll say that again. God doesn't give us what we can handle. He helps us to handle what we've been given. When did your walk with the Lord start?
You know, I mean, my parents, we went to church on Wednesday nights and Sundays, and my parents are you know, serious Christians, but never really pushed it hard on me. And then I saw a lot of occultism and corruption in Dallas. And then my dad sold some dental offices he owned and moved to Austin, because that had always been the goal, because my mom's from Austin and my parents met at UT, so they always wanted to get here. And once I got here, it was more new agey and weird. And I could say I fell away from God when I was in junior high and high school. Dallas, where I went to school, was pretty rough compared to the way things are today. People didn't shoot each other. They got in fights. So I was in a lot of fights. I wasn't a bully, contrary to what CNN has gone back and made up stories about. But I did get in a lot of fights, and I did get proud of myself. So then, you know, everybody wants to fight the guy that, you know, has won all these fights or whatever. So I got in a lot of fights, got arrested a few times. And I never started the fights, but I got arrested, you know, for putting people in the hospital and stuff. And then I moved to Austin, and I had quite a few girlfriends because I finished up a couple years of high school in Austin. And my dad, when I was living at home, like saw the bill in my room for an abortion. And he said to me, he said, you know, I don't want you to kill my grandchildren. He said, you really shouldn't do that. You know, ought to control yourself. And later in life, you're going to wish you hadn't been part of this, because I'd paid for some abortions. But he just happened to see that bill. And he already knew, because a girlfriend was around about a year before. And I guess she confided in my mother that she'd had an abortion. You know, they'd come and want, you know, and, you know, they didn't want to tell their parents or whatever. And they'd be like 16, 17-year-old girl, and they'd go have an abortion. My dad said, you really need to stop killing my grandchildren. And I still kept doing what I was doing for a while. And then I really started having nightmares about it and really feeling a spirit of evil attacking me, and that I had some important work I was going to do. It was the Holy Spirit, and that God wasn't going to help me, and that I wasn't going to be happy if I didn't, you know, stop doing what I was doing. And so for a few years, I stopped dating and was already working out and stuff, but I got really into shape, started exercising, started reading the Bible more, started watching C-SPAN and getting really into politics again and history. And I remember my mother walking in when I was like 18, about to move after high school. And she goes, I haven't seen a girl here in about a year. Are you gay? Because it went from like all the beauty queens at the house, because I was really good looking back then, to like no women around. My mom goes, what the hell's going on? So I moved out and I started dating some girls and, you know, kind of getting back into it. But they'd get upset if you wouldn't go right to bed with them. And so for about a year and a half, I was pretty much celibate. Just got back into politics. And then literally it was like the Holy Spirit was, you've got to fight the New World Order. You've got to engage these people. You've got to go challenge these people. You've got to do what your uncle talked about. You've got to resist them. And then in community college, I was seeing it all. And so it was like, there's this mission and you've got to do this and you've got to challenge these people. And so I was like 19 going to city council meetings. I haven't been able to find any video of it. And county commissioner meetings, getting in their face about taking farmers' land for environmental land grabs and them trying to pass gun control and things. So I was involved years before I got on air. And then, again, I started the Access TV show. And about 6 months into it, right before I got the call to be on talk radio, I was sitting in a restaurant by myself at night after I'd done like a two-hour show on Access TV. And almost nobody's in the restaurant. And I remember I'm sitting there drinking iced tea and eating a chicken fried steak. And it was like the whole future opened up. And it, not the exact future, but it was like a metaphysical moment where I was like at another level for about an hour in the back of this restaurant with sitting there. And it was like, you're gonna take on the New World Order. It's going to be huge. You're going to be the guy that triggers all these other leaders that are going to come forward that are going to be part of defeating this. But you have to understand, you're going to get destroyed in the end, and it's going to be very painful, and it's going to not be fun. And I remember, like, I've never been in the presence of something like that. I didn't see Christ. I didn't see an angel. I was like this download, you know, that people like David Icke talk about. And I was just like, for like an hour and a half, like this, after I ate dinner, like in the restaurant, going, what in the world's going on here? And it was this sense of completion and absolute, like, knowing confidence, beyond confidence. And I remember just driving home and just like the top of my head had blown off. And it was like, this is a mission. You're doing this. And at that point, I was like, that was outside of me. This is real. And I was like commissioned at that point. And in that moment, it was like God was telling me, and you stop killing the kids, and you're not going to do that now. And then right after that, I met my wife, started dating her, got her pregnant. We got married, had my son Rex, who's 20 years old now, or more than 20 now, time flies. And so that's basically my experience with God. But the being involved in the abortion, I was lying to myself. It's not a human, it's just flesh, just a blob of tissue. I was convicted by the Holy Spirit about it. First convicted by my dad, then convicted by the Holy Spirit by it. And then I stopped the sin. And then literally that allowed the transmission and the connection to God, but that had to be removed, because before that was happening, I was, and I want to say depressed, but dark forces were pushing energy at me and trying to push me off what I was supposed to do, because the devil's not omnipresent, but the devil has foresight into the future. And so there was definitely a interdimensional spiritual whirlpool going on around me at that time, and I needed God to actually get out of that whirlpool, because you're either with God or you're with the devil, and so that's basically what happened.
And since then, I'm assuming your walk with the Lord was actually with Jesus has gotten better?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely honest. I go off and on. I have a problem with alcohol. I also have a problem, not with family so much, but with anger. If I work too much and drink too much caffeine and stuff, I wouldn't call them psychotic breaks, but I mean, I definitely can turn into a monster. And I've gotten really good in the last, 4 or 5 years not doing it. But that's also my walk with God, is that I realized I would get mad that I couldn't beat the globalist myself. And I believed in God, believed in Jesus, and had discernment and the Holy Spirit, but I was still trying to do it myself. And it's only been the last 4 or 5 years I learned to turn it loose and not get so mad about what they're doing. I'm still mad about it, but go, it's up to God, it's God's plan, and I have to have some level of detachment, or when you stare into the abyss, as Nietzsche says, you become the abyss. So I have to make sure that I don't focus on the enemy too much or ever hate them, because then that hate becomes you. I have to realize that they're fallen, they're garbage, they're evil, and just protect the good people and just cut them off and not even think about them.
Wow. Wow, Alex. Well, you've been on this journey for a long time, and you've got incredible research on your own. You've got a great research team, and you've interviewed thousands of people, and you got introduced to this whole, New World Order, this whole thing very early on. And in this entire journey, has there been a couple of things along the way that have been really shocking or surprising to you? I mean, things that, you kind of went, oh my, I never expected that.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, when I was like 5, we moved from Dallas, like central Dallas on White Rock Lake, to Rockwall. That was like a bedroom community then, but the richest county in Texas then, with a bunch of private airfields and helicopter fields and money. And so it was a paradox of it had the black projects in it in downtown, the old town, and then it had all these rich people that lived out in the country and the hills around it. It's a hilly area, kind of like Austin. Most of Dallas is flat, and it's on Lake Ray Hubbard. And I was shocked that there was a lot of Satanism going on, and not just what you think of as white trash in their backyard sacrificing a dog on Halloween. I mean, real Luciferian type stuff. And I can tell some of those stories, but it just gets into how weird my life's been. Now that was God preparing me, that I never engaged in the Satanism itself. But I lost my virginity when I was 12. I looked like I was 16 when I was 12. And when I was 16, I looked like I was 25. And so I'm 48 now. And so I girls that were a little bit older, like 16 years old. And I definitely liked it. So I became very promiscuous. And so then I got roped in by some of the girls that were seniors in school when I was a freshman in high school, and then even college women, and then other stuff. And then it became very apparent with 3 or 4 of the women who were in rich families that they would try to get me inducted into Luciferianism. And it was actually an actual cult operating out there. I didn't understand that. And then so that's one of the reasons my dad sold his dental offices and actually moved to Austin, which I ran into no Satanism down here. It was more New Age stuff and hippie stuff. But that area of Rockwall had a very rich, powerful group of occultists going on, similar to what's in Monterio and the Russian River. California has the same group. There's a big one in New York. There's a big satanic group in Pennsylvania, also in Omaha, Nebraska, San Francisco. And so that kind of primed me early on that, some girl picks you up in her $100,000 Mercedes, and you're 14 years old, and you go to her mansion and you're having sex with her, and then a week later, she invites you to her house, and literally one of these houses was a castle. They had a castle out in the country, and that with helicopter pads and airfield and everything, and in come these rich parents, and they're literally saying, hey, we want you to join this cult. Do you like having sex with my daughter? So I got immediately, they tried to put me immediately into one of the higher levels of these feeders. Most people get into the occult and they go join a satanic church and they're up for years and never make it into the inner rings of it. But I bypassed the stepping stones. They tried to put me right into it. And so again, my big challenge was my big temptation was sex. And I'm saying once I transcended that, when I was about 19, that's when my main mission started.
Wow. That's pretty shocking at that early age that you were not only able to not get involved with it, but to kind of walk away from it. That shows.
Well, there was like a wall, like at the point that happened those times, there was like a wall, but because I didn't fully reject it, I was still demonically influenced. And you know, I did stuff. Well, I beat people to people start fights with me. Like they were obviously attracted to me because I would like beat up full grown men and stuff. And it was not good. And it was definitely satanic. But the point is I got out of it. I was never officially in it, but I was spiritually influenced by it. So let's just say this. I've been very blessed to be somebody that got on Satan's railroad for a while, but got off the train. But I now see back that was all part of God's process, because if I didn't see all that early on, I wouldn't be ready for it now.
Well, that's a true statement. I mean, you know, our whole life sort of, you know, we were both born for a time such as this, and all of our previous experiences have kind of gotten us to this place. So as you move on to the end of your life, Alex, how do you want to be remembered?
I didn't used to care how I was remembered, but now I know how the globalists operate, like they've done with the whole, I won't even say the name of it, Connecticut stuff, where I barely ever covered the internet questioning it, literally 24 minutes in all those years before they sued me. Then 6 years after they sue me, they now admit a top PR firm that does the PR for the UN out of New York said, we're going to run against Trump with Alex Jones the last 2 months of the 26 campaign or the 2016 campaign. And we're going to build him up as this guy that did all this stuff he didn't do, because he's the archetype of the populist resistance. So we can capture him and not have him as an icon of populist folk hero resistance, as they said it. It's now come out. I'm not calling myself that. That's how they saw it. And we can turn him into this horrible bully of children and this mean guy. Then we can default him. Then we can have a judge say I'm guilty. And then we can create this false archetype. So it's very important that they not be able to capture the Alex Joneses or the Sherry Tenpennies or the Tucker Carlsons of the world with the fake creature they create. Because they don't just create a straw man. They make that fake straw man who you are, and then don't just use that currently. They then use that to rewrite history in the future. That's why it's important to try to be as healthy as I can, to be on air as long as I can, show that as they're in live time trying to rewrite history that I'm this horrible person, people understand that it's bigger than me just saying, oh, Alex Jones was right. Where used to, I would like, just didn't even want to, I don't want to be arrogant. It's not about me, because if you make it about ego, it actually weakens you. But now I see myself as a symbol that I need to be better on air, because I make mistakes and I need to be more steadfast because I'm an example. But also they've made a false example. Once they deplatform you on all their platforms, they can create whatever they want you to be and basically steal your identity. And so that's why how people remember is important. I want to be remembered as somebody that was pro-human, pro-God, pro-family, that stood up against evil and that had a great effect, and to be an example to others in the future who are going to face their own trials and tribulations, to understand that Satan's in control of this planet, but God's in control of the universe that made you. And it's going to be the animating contest of liberty and this challenge that's going to really, really make you who you are. And so you're not going to be happy serving the system. You're not going to be happy being a sellout. You're going to be happy in the animating contest of liberty. And you shouldn't expect to change the world overnight by yourself, but just little things like being a good father or a good mother, being a good boss or being a good employee, you know, having a garden, caring about your neighbors, visiting old people, you know, with a with an animal at the nursing home, just putting light into the world is the right thing to do, and it's what we need to do. And so many good people that love God are ashamed in God's presence and the Holy Spirit and know that we're sinners and then never want to do anything because we're not perfect. Well, God knows you're not perfect. I'm certainly wasn't perfect. And so but God has helped transform me 90% away from the point I was at. And so now overall, I don't even, you know, speed anymore in my car. And so it's all just a process of becoming better and better because we're an example to others. And it's not because we're Pharisees. It's not because we have all the answers, but it's because people see us as leaders. We need to live up to that. And people also have to understand that when they defend InfoWars or defend free speech or defend others under persecution, that's what the enemy can't stand, because if they can pick off our leaders, they're going to win. So I just want to be remembered as somebody that really was a straight shooter and really did did tell the truth and really did, you know, try to be as honest as I could. I've made mistakes, but I've never been this cunning, evil, manipulative mastermind they claim. They project who they are onto me. I've actually just been trying to tell the truth and swinging for the fences.
That's really good. I forgot to ask you, do you have any siblings?
My mother got sterilized by the Dalcon Shield IED.
Oh, wow.
When my dad was finishing up medical school, she wanted to have a bunch of kids. I only throw that out there because that's the system that they knew, by the way, sterilized people. And she actually got a settlement from that, but she'd rather not have the money. She'd rather have more children. And so when I was 14, they adopted my sister from Korea, who was an orphan when she was about a year old. And she sees my sister, you know, even though she's not blood, she's just as much blood as not. And so I have one sister, Marley Jones, and she's an awesome person. And so that's who I have for that. I have some great cousins and some great folks. But yeah, my mom certainly would have liked to have more children, and I wish I did. I have four children. I have three children with my ex-wife, who's a nice person, but kind of got psychologically colonized by the system. But I care about her, and you know, hope she does well. And I have three children that have lived with me since that divorce happened 8 years ago. But two of them are moved out now. And then I have a 5-year-old daughter with my great, wonderful wife, Erica. And so I've got four children.
Oh, wow. That's great. So that's a big span between, you know, did you say he's older than 20 into five. So, you know, God bless you on both ends of your life, you know, with children. That's really great.
I mean, I look back on the children I killed, not knowing it. And I just have nightmares about my children having problems now. I just, every time I see my daughter get in the car and drive off with my wife, I worry about traffic and wrecks. And I just literally, my heart aches for my children, loving them. And it's just, that's why they don't want you to ever have kids. So you would never imagine how precious they are. And the fact that I was lied to and deceived by the system, you know, to have paid for, I don't know, 6-7 abortions over the years. But people harden their hearts when they do that and say, I love it, I love abortion. No, soften your heart. No, you made a mistake, you were lied to. Don't commit to it once you know it's murder. Then God, I really think, sees that as the ultimate sin. And that's why the left now says, of course it's a kid, kill that little creature. You know, they've really gone from it's a blob of tissue to, yeah, we kill kids, we love it. You know, that's really their mainline statement. They wear shirts, how many abortions they've had. And I think really abortion is the heart of the undermining of our country and our world. If we don't value our children, then God's not going to value us, and we're cheapening human life. And so I think, you know, with me, abortion was the breaking point with the devil, even though I wasn't consciously with the devil. And so for so many other people who've hardened their hearts, and I know most of your audience didn't like that, but for people in your families out there, just talk to them and explain that weight and that bitterness and that darkness and that disconnect from God can come with repenting that you've killed your children. And I mean, I have murdered my children. I am a murderer. And that's just a fact.
You know, I did an interview with the producer of a documentary called The Matter of Life. It's about abortion, but it's the best documentary. If you haven't seen it, Alex, I'd encourage you to engage in it. It's called The Matter of Life is the name of the documentary, and it's all done from a perspective of embryology. You know, that these two cells and these four cells are the same person as this 150-pound person sitting here. It's really, really good. I think it would make a good interview for you on your show.
I'd love to have him on. What's the name of it?
It's called The Matter of Life is the name of the documentary. And Michelle can get you the name and the contact information of the producer.
Well, just an elaboration on that. When a human egg and sperm come together, there's that big flash of energy. And you don't see that with you know, most of the creatures out there. You see it with whales, other more advanced things. But the point is, there's this huge flash of energy. They don't even know what it is, this pulse when they come together. I mean, that's real magic. I mean, that is what God created.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, that's life. But Michelle can get you or your people the information, because it's a wonderful documentary. I don't usually spend time to watch 2-hour documentaries. I just don't really have the time. But in preparation for that interview, I watched the whole thing. And it's really, really, really good. And so Michelle can get your people that. So just as we're closing up here, there's two last questions I want to ask you. One is, say something about your book, about why you wrote it. And what, you know, there's a lot of books out there about the New World Order and the reset now. What made you decide you wanted to write this book?
Well, I'd read some other books on the Great Reset that were excellent, and I wanted to bring a bigger perspective to it and kind of the end game of what they were planning and how they're stealing free will in the whole future. Now it's bigger than just a global corporate takeover. So the Great Reset is literally the plans of the Death Star and the proof of their criminal conspiracy against humanity and their own admissions that they want to be God and that they want to play God. And so I just hope people will go to InfoWarsStore.com and get a unsigned copy. Or as a fundraiser, we're selling a signed copy because we need the funds to stay on air. We will stay on air despite all their attacks and all their fake judgments. This will all be overturned on appeal, but that'll take 2 years. So regardless, we'll be here for two more years if we have money for the appeals and those process. And we're just, you know, right there in the edge of the black right now. So financial support from the viewers would be great. I hope people will get a copy of The Great Reset and The War for the World at InfoWarsStore.com. Got some other great books and films there on the site. But and I know the listeners pretty much already know all this, but imagine your friends and family and neighbors getting a copy. Or get it, read it, donate it to the library, and it'll be another seed that you put out there, another, you know, message in a bottle to the universe. And so, or try to take it to your library, your school library, doesn't have pedophilia in it, and watch the local AISD or local independent school district try to ban it. We'll then do a report on that and use their own censorship against them and have the book blow up even more. So I want to thank everybody that has gotten the book. I want to encourage everybody else to get it at InfoWarsStore.com.
What words of advice would you like to leave our listeners with here today?
Try to be as conscious as you can. Try to pray as much as you can. Try to really seek God's discernment and realize that you're not judged by how much money you have. You're not judged by what the world thinks. You're judged by what God sees. And that it's not fun to be persecuted in the flesh, but in the spirit, it's actually the greatest high there is when you know they're coming after you because you're doing the right thing. So just keep your faith in God and get engaged now more than ever, because the children are crying out to God to protect them, but God made us with free will. So God works through us to answer their prayers. And so we are, you know, on this earth, not like angels, but, you know, if we choose to serve God as God's instruments to go out imperfectly, but to go out and try to protect the innocent. And so I do see it as, you know, once you're saved in Christ, the blood of Jesus, all is forgiven. But faith without works is dead. So yes, grace does it, and that's. But if you're really coming into Christ, then you're going to get stronger and stronger over time with Christ, and less will evil have control over you. And none of us are perfect. But I mean, compared to how I was 10 years ago, and I was a Christian, a pretty good person then, I'm a way better person, you know, now. And so it's a process. And so God will reach out to you, but you've got to reach out to God. So you know, God's knocking, but you got to open the door. And people have to realize that this is a process, and so if you don't step out and start doing this, it's, you know, the world's never going to get better. And so I would encourage people to start their own podcast or start their own letter to the editor or call in to talk radio more. Just, you don't have to change the world overnight. Many hands make light work. Just do a little something up front, like I did calling in to talk radio and going to city council meetings when I was, you know, 19 years old, 18 years old. And just looking for ways to be heard. I mean, look at city council, county commissioners, school boards everywhere, every day, flood Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. Oh, okay, they can ban this person, they can't ban everybody. And then you'll see videos with hundreds of thousands, millions of views, dozens of them where you can't even watch them every day, but everybody else is. And it's just moms and dads and brothers and sisters and grandmas and grandpas and teachers going to the grassroots power structure and saying, we're not buying it. And that totally scared the system where they said, send the FBI after him. Well, then, of course, the FBI was discredited for that. So every venue you can to be heard. Every venue you can magnify Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's information or my information, do it.
That's great. And it's true. I mean, you know, they literally hire, you know, troops of trolls to go out for their messages. And we have 10 times more people, but you got to volunteer your time. You know, I've said to people sometimes, you know, write down the 5 or 6 things that you're really interested in and pick one and donate as much time and then decide how many hours per week of volunteer time that you can actually give. Is it 5 hours a week? Is it 5 hours a day? I mean, whatever it is, and then commit to it like it was a dental appointment. I mean, you commit to it and really do, because all of our organizations need boots on the ground They all need people going out
and folks are going to find, folks are going to find it's not work. You'll get addicted to it. And exactly. There's so many organizations that are good, but they kind of plan all day and, you know, there's who's in charge of it. There's battles about the organization. Don't do that, folks. Just get out there. Just get out there and start speaking out.
So, you know, put comments on things, you know, support things, you know, if you're going to buy something, buy it from Alex's store, buy it from our store. I mean, if you're going to buy it anyways, buy it from people that you want to support and don't support the beast by buying it from Amazon.
Wars take money. Wars take money. Absolutely. And that's starting to happen. And that's what scares them. That's what scares them so much. Well, thank you so much for having me on. You're hard to get on because I know you're a busy person. You're prolific. And Dr. Sherry Timpani, congratulations on being one of their top enemies. That, you're doing a lot of great work.
Well, thank you, Alex. And Alex, thank you so much. You're massive. You're what you're doing is so great. And if there's anything else I can do to support you, please don't be afraid to ask. And I want to thank you so much for your really candid disclosure here, Alex. I know people learned things about you today that they never heard before. And probably will never hear again. So I want to thank our premium podcast members that these are the sort of things that we bring to you. And so we close all of our podcasts, whether they're pre-recorded or whether they're broadcast live, with Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient with trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again on our next broadcast, stay strong, stay in prayer, lean into God. He'll never let you down. Alex, we'll pray for you. We bless you. We thank you so much for everything you're doing. And, thank you for never letting us down, my friend. Take care and have a great rest of your week.
Thank you and God bless.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch within our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing, that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero, could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-drt. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-drt. There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to your gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for.